I think if you believe, you believe, and if you need validation from other people, then in order to believe, that's not really belief. That's you just blowing with the wind. There's many ways to succeed. If you find like slow money and like with patience, it also can be really successful.
Hello and welcome to the Common Creative Podcast. My name's Chris Merrilith.
And I'm Paul Fairweather.
And we're on a mission to lift a lid on creativity at work and beyond through this lens of ideas, stories, and images. And wow, what a guest we have for this, our 100th episode of the Common Creative Podcast. Reveal all, Paul.
So our guest today is David Hyatt. David is an entrepreneur, for the want of a better word, because he's more than that. An amazing person who founded lots of things in his life, but currently he runs with his wife Hyatt Jeans, coming out of Cardigan in Wales, as well as an amazing little conference called the Do Lectures. And while I've been a fan of David's for many years, and it was such a privilege to get him on, and he was so free with his time and his ideas, Chris, and his insight.
I think I call him a maverick. I mean, if you haven't heard of Hyatt Jeans, they're handmade in Wales by people he calls grandmasters. He basically reopened a jeans factory that had closed down. And this is a person whose background is in advertising. So, what does he know about manufacturing? And yet he's built this brand with a global reputation all around hand-making beautiful jeans that last a lifetime. And that's only part of what he does. Tell him what about the Do Lectures, Paul.
Yeah, so the Do Lectures has been going for 15, 14 years, and it's in his cow shed on their little farm, and it's limited to 100 people. There's a waiting list, an incredible array of speakers. It's certainly on my bucket list to get there some stage, so it was great. He runs online courses and things, and fantastic. I've done quite a few of them. He really is an incredible thinker and has such fantastic insights about creativity in life and business. And so he really is our pinup boy for the 100th episode of the Common Creative Podcast.
Yeah, I don't think you would get a better guest to celebrate our 100th show, the epitome of creativity, not just in theory, but in practice. Let's get him in, David Hyatt.
David Hyatt, welcome to the Common Creative Podcast. It's fantastic to have you on the show.
Pleasure, and great to be here. And, it's super nice to be talking to you today, and I'm excited to just share some thoughts.
So, David, great to meet you. Very excited to have you on the show.
So, David, pleasure. Speed bio.
Yeah, I got a speed bio here, which is my thing that has just literally just gone and disappeared. But basically, bankrupt at 16, thrown out of college at 18, joined Saatchi at 21, had a ball, left advertising to go back to Wales, started Howie's in 1995, sold it to Timberland, left, started the Do Lectures, which was voted in one of the top 10 ideas festivals in the world by The Guardian. And in 2012, started a company called Hyatt Denim Company, and that aim was to get 400 people their jobs back, because our small town used to have Britain's biggest jeans factory. So currently we now employ 22 people. So
that is a world record bio. Thank you so much for that. And for anybody listening, I should explain, we're looking at David, I'm guessing, in your attic. We can see you huddled up in a warm coat. It's winter in Wales, which is where you're broadcasting from. Here we are nearly in summer in Australia. Very kind of you to get out of bed very early to join us for this show.
Yeah. I mean, in my writer's shed at the bottom of the garden, and I spend a lot of time here. Claire says too much time, but this is where I write. But I write mostly in the mornings, and then I'm done. So,
I wonder if I could jump in with a question, David. Where does your heart lie? Because there are these two themes to what you do. Obviously, you're running basically a factory that turns out jeans, and only jeans, a manufacturing business. On the other hand, Do Lectures are very creative, a kind of ideas festival, completely different things. Where does your heart lie?
Well, I mean, let me answer this because it's relevant to jeans. Is like, which leg is most important? Left leg or right leg? And you kind of need both to walk. And actually, perhaps both really answer, like, sort of creative needs or curiosity needs. And And they're kind of like twinned. I mean, it's really hard. I mean, like Sophie's Choice, the film, it's really hard to, like, you know, like which child you love the most. I mean, I got two girls, they're always going, you got our favorite, you know, she's your favorite. And it's like, oh man. So it's a tension. It is a tension. It's a beautiful tension, but it is a tension. Yeah.
But they don't feel like twins to me. They're so different from each other. And after all, for Hilary Denham, your kind of battle cry is do one thing. You're not doing the hoodies and the bobble hats and so on. And if I might point out, you're doing at least two things in the shape
of
doing
exactly, that. Yeah. Yeah. No, my youngest calls me full of shit because, you know, our slogan is do one thing well and we're doing two companies. If I ever mention like an idea, I had like an idea for a beer company, which was after speaking to somebody at Patagonia, you know, Earth Positive Ale, EPA, she said, there's no way you start another company. Like it's banned. It's like, the kids just go, you're not starting anything. It's like, two is enough. Like, one too many in their way of thinking. But
should everybody do two things? I mean, Paul and I, this podcast is all about creativity in the workplace. I'm sure we're going to get great learnings from you, but I don't run a manufacturing company. Paul, as far as I know, doesn't either. Should everybody have two very different things?
Oh, I've sort of changed my thinking on this. And because I'm learning so many different skills in from the different companies, I'm becoming this generalist. And actually, that's not a bad thing. I mean, so I think I've got, like, I'm having to learn, you know, like writing, I'm having to learn social media, I'm having to learn newsletters, I'm having to learn how to go and do keynotes. So suddenly you become this generalist, not a specialist in one particular things, but actually generalists are quite well placed in this world because you have to have a lot of skills. And so I think it's kind of interesting. I don't think it's easy because some people just go, stay in your lane. You go, but I got so many lanes. It's a tricky one. It's full of, I'm sort of full of shit, just so you know, because I'm like, man, like, what the hell?
I'm really, I don't know if you're full of shit or not, but I'm a journalist as well. So, but I'm interested, you know, you started and just on this tension, you know, obviously you're trying to grow the genes, you're 5% of the way there to getting the complete workforce back. But you've managed with the do lectures to, you know, you made it 100 people and you've left it 100 people. You know, you run some other things related to it. But yeah, so tell me about that because, you know, there's normally this, you know, these runaway successes grow, but you've obviously managed.
I would love to say it was like really strategic thinking that has made the do lectures. Like it's pretty unique. It's without comparison in my eyes. It's a 100 person event that it seeks only to be more magical each year, so it can't get bigger. But it was really made that way by the planning officer. So when we went to try and grow it, they were going, no chance, that property is listed and you ain't touching that. So I was kind of stopped. So I had this beautiful constraint that at the time, and like with the benefit of hindsight, I'm just going, oh, that was the best thing ever. At the time, I'm just going, I want to grow this thing. And actually, when I could only grow its magic, that's when it became like unlike anything else in the world. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, you got to think back to, it's always good to look at things and you go, oh, it's incredible success now. It's, you know, there's a wait list. You know, it's really hard to get in. But in the first years, we couldn't sell a bloody ticket. I mean, like, people just go, I mean, I was begging people. Like, people bought a ticket because they liked me and they knew they weren't even going to come. I mean, there was such pity parties. Yeah. And so now it's different. But in the early years, it was very difficult to see how the hell it was going to work, and at the same time I'm trying to grow it and the planning officer is just going, man, you ain't growing this thing at all.
Sounds like Clarkson's farm.
Yeah, I mean it's literally, and then you think, oh, But if we had grown it, I don't think it'd be as special as it is now and as unique. It's in a cow shed in West Wales. It's literally once a year. It's 100 people. It's really hard to get in. There's a wait list. I mean, it's like, we don't spend any money advertising it. We don't market it in as much as the traditional sense. I mean, we just only... The only people who can come are on our newsletter. If you're not on our newsletter, you'll never know how to get in. So,
what was the turning point? What turned it from you begging people to turn up because they like you through to something that's so cool?
I think my mum, who is no longer with us, sadly, but she said, you are the most stubborn mule in the stubborn mule factories ever. And you know when you're into something and you can't actually tell people why, where you just go, I just think there's something important here. And so for years, I mean, myself and Claire didn't pay ourselves for the first 10 years each. So collectively, we've done 20 years of work and not paid ourselves. And people go, oh, it's okay for you, Dave. And I'm going, yeah, sure. We're living the dream, man. We're living the dream, man. We're literally on the coattails of success, man. But I think sometimes in terms of ideas, the most important thing that you can give them is love and patience. And actually, in this rush, I need to be scaling this thing to X by Y. I don't think it always builds the best things ever. So I'm pretty sure after 14 different iterations of trying to get better and better and more magical or more different, we're now at a point where we're going, right, okay, next year we've got to get even more different. So the quest isn't becoming less. The quest is becoming more to go, right, how do we dial up the crazy shit more?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of bonkers. The turning point was really... how when people started telling their friends, after about 3 years, there was enough people out there to go, it's batshit crazy, but you gotta go. Yeah, and so if you think about it, over 14 years, there's 1,400 people who are your marketing department.
Yeah.
And it's more than enough.
And weirdly, that's a classic business model, isn't it? You're people, a community, a bunch of fans, and they do the work for you. You don't have to come buy ads and so on. They just tell their mates.
And so you have people going, oh, I've been to Burning Man. I've been to all these places. And this thing, even though it's in the cow shed, it's the farm's not pretty. I mean, it's not like there's no like five-star butler service. It's like, but it's the collection of everything. When you put it all, the sum of the parts is much greater than an individual part. Is it about the speakers? Is it about the food? Is it about the bands? Is it about going in the ocean and swimming? It's not one thing, but when you put them all together, it's like, I think it's also when people come, sometimes you're in your part of your life where you're at a crossroads and you've got to turn left or right and you just don't know which one. And so you're very receptive to, hey, maybe you could turn left, maybe you could turn right. So it's a bookmark moment in terms of some people's lives where they're just going, maybe they've just done 20 years in a job that they kind of used to love, but now don't love.
I was thinking, how do, if I can put it this way, normal people apply this? Because it's kind of, you're flying in the face of so many rules of business about you have to grow, you have to market, you have to, in a way, emulate your rivals. And you've gone, no. You've got to be stubborn. A constraint can be a piece of beauty, and you do stuff that's batshit crazy. Is this a one-off? Is this David Hyatt?
I think if I'm zooming out, and some of the lessons I've learned in business, and maybe these will help people to think in a way where they can win. If you're trying to do something and be better than this restaurant or this coffee shop, being better is nuanced.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really hard to tell better from 100 yards.
Yeah.
Being batshit different is really easy to spot at a mile. And so you want to be different more than you want to be better.
Yeah.
And so I think that's because it's a busy world out there. And if we were in a conference center, if we were 1,000 people, we'd just be another conference. And I mean, there's a reason like Tim Ferriss came in 2008, and like there's a reason why he's got like a Stay Curious sticker on his computer. No one, like the retail estate, you know, like of where you put stickers on your computer. I mean, that's a very hard like media.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a media you can't buy, right? So So if Tim's putting that sticker on his laptop, it means it meant something to him in that moment where he was in that, you know, push moment.
Yeah.
And so those peak moments of life, suddenly, so the Do is playing with those because some people come and they're ready to turn left.
Yeah.
David, just on that, you know, better and different, one of the workshops I attended of yours, one of the courses, it might have been the newsletter one, besides the, you know, the great content and the insights, obviously, from both the Do lectures and the Hyatt Genes, one of the things that really struck me was your drawings.
Yes.
Which, and Chris and I, you know, we do a thing around visual storytelling. And I just love, and I think they're in some of your books as well, that I suppose, you know, I believe everyone can draw, but there is a subjective thing about the bad drawings. But I love that confidence that you have. He's going, like, here are the drawings. I'm not bothering sending this to the art department, or, you know, this is my simple stick drawing, and very descriptive.
And the thing for me is you kind of got to, like, if this is to be super helpful to people out there, it's like, don't try and be like somebody else. And the most important thing is be you. And the reason I do those drawings is because I can go and get somebody much better, much more talented than me, but they stop seeing me. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately your job is to try and help another person help you. You want to help people, but you kind of want them to be able to see you. And perfection is is a tough layer to get past. So if I'm showing you my drawings, it's not because I can draw, but it's also to tell people going, hey, look, do you know, it's okay to be you, because that's what people remember. Because if they were like done by some amazing illustrator, you wouldn't have really taken note.
Well, I wouldn't have remembered that. That's right. So,
So
it's a very, I was going to say un-English, forgive me, un-British idea to be you, isn't it? The British are all about putting on a brave face and a stiff upper lip and all that kind of thing. So where did you learn to be you? Because I think it's a massive issue that people are always asking, who do I copy? How do you want me to be? What should I, how should I mold myself? And you're going, don't mold yourself in anything except your own mold. Where did you learn that?
Well, I mean, I was kind of thinking about this the other day for another thing, because I've seen like maybe over 400 talks. And when you can hear somebody's voice shake is you start to feel them. And when you like have somebody who goes through their notes like a breeze, it's super slick. And so slick doesn't let you in. But when there was a lady this year who spoke, and the whole 100 people there were lifting her up because she was shaking, and she was so nervous. She cared so much. Everybody felt it. And there's some really famous people who do, you know, amazing talks, and they do the same talk all the time. And nobody really connects with perfection. And, you know, like, oh, it's... So you have to let another human in. And one way to do that is to show them that you care. Once they see that you actually care, then they kind of, like, start to give you... cut you some slack.
Yeah, allow you to be human with all the flaws and all the things that goes with that.
Yeah. I mean, and there's a lot of flaws. Yeah, you know, it's like...
How do you reconcile... Because I'm thinking about Hewitt Denham now, which I mean, it's 20 people, 20 plus people. It's even that's a kind of the system, and you produce beautiful garments. And so, you know, as a production operation, I'm guessing you are after perfection, aren't you? You're after getting it right and sending out beautiful things to you. Is there is it about flaws in personality, but perfection in production? Is that how it works?
I tell you one thing that we do, which almost no one else does, and this is why we're different to every other pair of jeans, is a grandmaster will take the entire jean down the production line, right? So from they'll go from this machine, walk to the next machine, take the next machine to the... So it's the opposite of Henry Ford. Henry Ford was just going, yeah. Dave, man, what are you doing? Like, yeah. It's ridiculous. And so... It's not the fastest way to make a jean. It's not the cheapest way to make a jean. But what happens is that jean is unique to that person. So Grandmaster Jean makes the jean a little bit different to Grandmaster Ellen. So each one is different. So when, like, and it's just nuanced, right? But it's like having a song, like a singer sing a song. You go, well, it's the same lyrics.
Yeah.
Like, follow the beat. And you go, but you put a little bit of nuance in it. So each pair is unique in the world.
Yeah.
And people don't truly understand that, but it's kind of exceptional that we do that.
I can see why denim is your garment of choice, because denim has that unique ability to, over time, to mold itself to. So if you've been wearing a pair of jeans for 6 months, 12 months, there's no way anybody else can borrow them, even if they're the same size as you, because they won't be molded in the way they would have been having, you know, been on.
And it's like coffee. Do you mean like people get into coffee? I mean, jeans just like they're kind of like, I love hanging around with creative people, and it's the uniform of choice. But they do get better with age. I wish we could say the same, but it's kind of like you kind of fall in love with a pair of jeans after a while.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like now, maybe 7 months in, they suddenly become yours. You go, I've got my jeans.
I was looking at my wardrobe.
It's really weird.
I reckon I use 5% of my wardrobe 90% of the time, you know? It's those go-to garments.
I love the fact that in terms of the terminology, you know, we call them pairs, and they're a unique pair.
So
maybe the pairing is around the, you know, the master craftsman and the wearer, you know, so that's the other pairing, because, you know, it's a little bit like the resolution of a story. You know, it's up to the audience to finally resolve that. And so the gene itself is finally resolved after it's been worn.
Just to share, like, some of the beauty of it is the grandmasters are like, I don't know, and I don't truly understand this phrase, the salt of the earth, but I kind of know that they are it. And so they're up against it now. It's Christmas, you know, they're trying to get everything out. So because I knew they went in on their day off at 6 a.m. to catch up. So I went down like at 10 a.m. because I was like doing birthdays. But I went down with coffees, made them coffees and chocolates. But I didn't ask them to come in at that time. And like Grandmaster Jean's on holiday this week, but she's not starting her holiday till 7 a.m. So she's going in at 6 a.m. doing an extra hour just to support her team. And you know, they're just going, it's insane how much they are just honest, hardworking, super skilled people. And salt of the earth, I'm going to look it up and find out what it is, but I just think that's what they are. I mean, I think they're grounded in.
Is there any evidence that the world is catching up with you? I mean, in a good way, so working out what you do. And the reason I'm talking about, in a way, Hewitt Jeans, but Hewitt Denim being the exact opposite of fast fashion. And we're all, you know, I want it now, and I chuck it away when I don't like it anymore. And you're the exact opposite of that. And I'm hoping you're going to tell us that the world is catching up with that, the idea that things could be handmade, things do last, you treasure things. Or is it just a niche of hat men who like your jeans?
I think I mean, sort of like, I think it's our job to be optimistic. I mean, so, and I mean, and therefore we shouldn't probably read the news, but the, I see a generation coming up that are super interested in sustainability. And I don't think my generation were, I don't think they could even spell it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think the word even existed. And so like, so I'm seeing these people making choices on things which were, which are a bit more like sophisticated than we were doing. And so, and I think people, like, we've got to change. I mean, it's, yeah. you know, like, it's literally unsustainable. So, I mean, at some point people will go, there will be governments where just go, hey, you just can't buy stuff and throw it away. I mean, there's no more away. I mean, it's when you run out of, like, rubbish tips, it's an issue. I mean, never mind.
Thing about the word rubbish, it because rubbish implies something that's useless, and so the moment you label it in that way, is that it's everything you've got is going to have a value somewhere. So there shouldn't be rubbish. There'd be no rubbish bins, recycling bins, sure, or whatever, plastic and paper. But rubbish is a horrible concept.
Yeah, completely. So I'm hopeful, basically.
just back to the genes, like we talked about how the lectures sort of came about, how did the genes came about? Because the factory closed obviously some years before you restarted. So what was the driver? Do you remember?
Well, I mean, it depends how far we want to go back. Because I mean, at 16, I did try and start a sports brand. I went bankrupt. My dad asked me, and he lent me. He wasn't a rich guy. But he gave me half his savings, which wasn't very much. And within 6 months, I lost them all. Like, I mean, that's not a great conversation. And I said, look, Dad, I mean, just couldn't get it to work. He said, what did you learn from it? And I said, I loved it. He said, okay, the next thing to learn is how to be really good at it so you can do it forever. And so, I went back to college. I messed that up. I got thrown out. And so I've done an awful lot of failure, up until 20. And then I was unemployed for a year and a half. I had 150 interviews and I got a job in this agency called Saatchi & Saatchi. And, but I didn't really have any qualifications. My only qualification was I could think, but I loved all, sports brands and jeans brands. And I was obsessed, like truly obsessed. I'd be going to like trade shows at 13 and telling people how to do things. And I was writing them reports again, free kit. I never bought any kit when I was a kid. I just send off some ideas and they send me back some new stuff. So, I mean, after 8 years at Saatchi's, there's a guy called Louis Dreyfus who was a CEO and he said, I'm going to go and buy Adidas. And I'm like, I mean, he was already wearing jeans. He smoked a cigar and he was going out with Kim Basinger. And then he's there, I'm going to buy Adidas. And I'm going, dude. But I think at that point, Charles and Morris had fallen out with Louis Dreyfus. I think, I don't know, really know all some stuff went on. So essentially, I spent 6 months pitching for Adidas and we didn't win. And so the next week I quit. I took a £20,000 pay cut to go and work for the agency that won it. And then I spent a year and a half writing ads. My boss literally didn't like any of them. And like almost none. And I was like, man, I was just writing like crazy. But I had a real feel for the voice, and everybody else is trying to be Nike. And I'm going, we're not going to win by being Nike. It's kind of ridiculous strategy. You got to find the soul of this thing. And so all these ads I was writing, they just went, nope, nope, nope. And they were just trying to muddy the water between Nike and Adidas. And I thought it was a terrible strategy and it has been a terrible strategy. And so I took all those. I got hired by David Abbott at Abbott Mead Vickers, who owned Legas Delaney. So like he already didn't like me. Then he didn't like me even more because I went to work for like the company that owned his company. It's like, oh, messy. but I took all those ads that nobody would buy and I turned it into a company called Howie's, which I then sold a number of years later. But I had Japan's richest guy wanted to buy it. I had PPR, who owned, you know, Yves Saint Laurent and Gucci, wanted to buy it. Ed Steve Case, who started AOL, wanted to buy it and was going to invest $25 to $30 million if we moved to California. We'd never been to California. We just moved to Cardigan. If we'd known
California, like, it was warm,
if we knew how warm it was, we probably would have gone. But the point was, we didn't have any marketing budget, but I had this voice. And so even when I was failing, I kept going, but I just felt their strategy was wrong. And I think, like, maybe if people are listening to this, is like, just because you're wrong in that moment doesn't mean you're wrong. And so I think it's that thing of going, like if I'd towed the line and did everything, oh, let's go and do like pay limitation Nike ads, I wouldn't have started Howie's.
Yeah.
And so, going back to the jeans, is we sold it and then we realized, hey, we didn't really want to sell it. The company PPR were going, hey, they highlighted two brands in the world they wanted to buy, Quiksilver and Howie's. I said, look, if you can get it back from Timberland, we'll fund you. And I couldn't get it back. And so then I worked out, going, what are we really good at with Howie's? We're really good at merino, we're really good at jeans. And at the time, the factory in town was still going, and then it stopped going, right? So I'm going, well, we know how to do brands, the town knows how to make jeans, and this other little puppy coming up called the internet.
Yeah.
So suddenly you're in the right town, in the right time, with the right people, and you can go and start something. Yeah. So that's my speed bio of like 30 plus years.
I'm hearing that stubborn mule you talked about because you stuck with it when the advertising people hated you. They didn't publish your adverts. You're going, I know what I'm doing here. I know what I'm doing.
I think if you believe, you believe. And if you need validation from other people, then in order to believe, that's not really belief. That's you just blowing with the wind.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, but it's also to understand for people out there just going, I started in 19, you know, and I say myself and Claire started Howie's in 1995. We got our first paycheck in 2001. And some people go, oh, it's okay for you, Dave. You sold your company for millions. You go, hey, I didn't get anything for a long time. And the Do Lectures, I think it was a year ago, 2 years ago, we actually took a salary after 10 plus years. But the reason for that is, when you go and take big money from big people, there's always a big rush to go and, you know, show the growth.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, beautiful things, which are very particular, very different to what other people are doing, they can take time. I think if you're doing a tech idea, you should go and get a ton of money because you need to go and claim first spot pretty quick. But I think... It's not I'm against money. I think I'm against fast money.
I once worked for a drinks company, and a couple of our brands were malt whiskey brands. And I remember when I first started working here thinking, it's going to be really interesting and powerful to look at these brands that grow so slowly over time. And, you know, if you're doing a new product, you want a 10-year-old whiskey, presumably you have to wait 10 years.
Yeah.
The sad truth for a lot of the big brands is the opposite. They're looking for that Christmas promotion to boost the sales. And of course, every time you do that, it costs the brand some credibility. And you end up each, that little blip in sales gets harder and harder. And the actual equity goes down. So it's wonderful to hear that. Do you have to be a privately owned company to make that happen, do you think?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, if somebody's listening out there now, they think, oh, I need to do this without money. I have specialized in doing something without a marketing budget, mostly because nobody would give me one. I would happily spend other people's money. But it is that thing of being independent and playing. If you think you're going to succeed in 6 years and all you have to do is just keep going, like, what's the rush? It's like, man, like, because if you succeed and you're independent and you own it, like the Do Lectures doesn't have any shareholders, not even me and Claire. I mean, it has no investors. is he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like I'm talking to a guy, he wants to do a radio station. Oh, yeah, that'd be cool. Let's do a radio station. I don't have to go to the board. I'm just got. I mean, the fact that I was up on my hands and knees scraping up pigeon shit means, like, I get to choose our future because I didn't take the easy money. And it's just one way. There's many ways to succeed. If you find, like, slow money and, like, with patience, it also can be really successful. I mean, so it's not like there is no one way. There's just many ways, and it's okay. I mean, it's like,
I guess that's what's changing, because it was the case. I worked at Saatchi's for a very short time, by the way. I imagine it was before you ever joined. It was my first ever job whilst at uni, and I wormed my way into the media department working for Alec Kenny. Anyway, I think back then there was a formula. You work hard, you impress your boss, and you climb your way up the tree. But now, community, there is no one way. You choose your own path, certainly for people like Paul and I and you as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think working hard is like, in terms of with complete focus and deep work, is the smartest thing you can do.
Yeah.
Most people don't work hard. They go in 8 hours a day and they spend maybe 2 hours working. It's kind of interesting. I mean, you got some young people who are so driven, and then you got some young people who are so entitled. I definitely want to work with the driven people.
Yes.
So, what's next, David? More of the same?
I tell you, I'm just dialing up the craziness of stuff. I am interested in doing the radio station for The Do. I'm talking to somebody about that. But he's came on my courses, and, you know, like over 7 years, and he's going to start a radio station. That's very interesting. But I tell you what I'm doing, which is fascinating to me, is I've done an awful lot of courses, and I've written a couple of books. I'm launching courses by writing books, by doing beta tests, and then I finally, once I've done all the beta tests, and that's writing a book, doing workshops, doing online workshops, I then go and launch the online workshop. So for me, and I'm doing the thing with useful books where I'm literally loading up a chapter and people comment on the chapter going, oh, that's not clear, that's not clear. So I'm iterating stuff, which is kind of, I find really interesting, because then that thing of like, oh, not being the expert and just going, wow, okay, I think this is clear. But then you got, you know, 50 people say it's not clear at all. So I'm learning that aspect, and that's kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So listen, it was just an absolute pleasure to meet you, and feel great, so privileged. We're going to make this our 100th episode, by the way.
Yeah.
So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. So we'll let you know. Yes, exactly. But we're looking for... I think what you do is absolutely amazing. And I really hope to be in that chicken shit at some stage in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You must. I mean, it's nutrition for the soul. That's what it is.
Yeah. Lovely. Yeah, huge pleasure chatting to you, David. And a privilege. I'm really, really grateful for your wonderful insights. And I hope we meet face-to-face in the
Shadow. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
If you come and buy jeans, I'll go to the conference.
Chris, what a great conversation we had with David. It was really well. We had a few hiccups in the beginning with our recordings, but we got there in the end, and wow, it was really fantastic.
I don't know if we're ever going to top that. I mean, we've got big plans for 2024 and our 101st, 100 follow-up shows, but what an amazing bunch of insights about working hard and deep focus, about doing crazy shit, about having the patience. Slow money, if you like, is the key, not chasing fast money. So much stuff to inspire, and in a way frightened me, because he talked about his pig-headed obstinacy,
And it's awe-inspiring to hear how confident he was in his own vision, even when other people around him were telling him to stop and not.
Yeah, no, when he's in the advertising world and he, for years they hated his ads, but you know, he believed in them and he used that as a basis to start Howie. Yeah. And we didn't talk about it, but the other venture is to do books, which is a bit like his radio station. Someone approached him and said, can I publish some books? So we do have the editor and of the publisher of Do Books to come on later in the year, so in 2024. So yeah, so really, I'm really on a high, Chris. It was so much fun from his writing shed, not quite a little bit bigger than Roald Dahl's, but I think he did have the hero in the corner, and a wonderful person with great insights and fantastic.
If you've enjoyed the show. I would say buy a pair of higher jeans. Maybe that's what we should do first. But, you know, leave us a review. Do tell your friends about this particular episode. I think it's got incredible value to anyone who's keen to pursue their vision. Leave us a review, tell your friends. And, of course, tune in for our 101st episode, which will be published shortly.
Cheers. See you then.
See you soon.